Holy cow, can you believe it, guys? We're all back in the office again. It's been a couple of weeks since we've recorded an episode of True Crime on Easy Street. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
My name is Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
So we've had a couple of weeks off because last week was Easter. We're recording this on April the 16th.
Indeed.
And you folks out there in True Crime Land will hear this on the 19th of April. So it's been a few weeks since we have been talking just days before you would hear us talk because we were working ahead because Kelly went out of the country and she's going to tell us a story about that in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then Easter was last week. So we haven't been updating cases that we've talked about because we've been behind.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're back in our routine where we record on Sunday and you hear us on Wednesday. So we're going to get back into talking about some things that are a little bit more timely, things that have just happened in the news, those sorts of things. We're back doing that now, but I don't know anything about what we're going to talk about today. I just walked in. I am totally the dummy today. I'm going to sit back in my chair and play with my pen.
Don't do that.
Not where you can hear it on the mic. I'll do it back behind the chair, but I'm going to sit and listen today. Kelly, get us where we're going.
Okay. Well, Scott, I'm just going to say you did an excellent job the past 3 weeks on the Boys on the Tracks.
So I'm so glad that's over with.
Yeah, it's time for you to relax.
Ugh.
Be the dummy for a little bit, right?
Thank goodness.
I know. Take a little time off. But I did go to Europe and I had an excellent time. And I'm just going to share one quick story.
Yeah.
So on our way to Scotland, we passed a town that has, you know, the longest name. I think it's broken records.
Yes.
But the town's name, it takes up an entire building and it's all in, I believe it's Gaelic.
Okay.
So we don't know what it said. Of course, our tour guide, it just rolled right off of his.
Sure, he's a local. I mean, she was a local, I assume.
He was from England.
Okay.
But still could, you know, do all that. So we're just going to stop and stand under the sign and take a group picture. And we get out there and there's some other groups taking their pictures, but right before us, there's this little group. It looks about like an 8 to 12 year old, either rugby team or a soccer team, maybe.
I think they call it football over there, but
yeah,
I know what you mean.
They are, they're lining up, they're getting ready to get their pictures made. And obviously this is the little team captain and he's probably 10 or 11 and he's precious because he goes, "If you qualify as small, get down in front." Sammy, stand up. Liam, get down. And then he's just commanding everybody and he goes, "Where's Freddie?" And you hear, "Where's Freddie?" And then from the back you hear, "Freddie's in the toilet." And so he's like, "Everybody move." And so then they had to get out of our way. And then we get there and take a picture and we are laughing because he is.
Some big smiles in that photo.
Oh my gosh. He is the most precious little thing and the most proper little thing. I know he was, you know, trying to be a big man and commanding, but it just came off.
Team captain.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's
precious.
The team captain's
if
job.
You qualify as small.
If you qualify as small,
I can't
get
do
down in front.
Accents like, oh, I
it
wish I could.
It was wonderful. In fact, I mean, all of us were like, we have got to start using that phrase, if you qualify as small.
Yes.
And the only other thing I'll say is no one ever said a word about our accents, being from the South. And,
really?
And no one, you know, everybody was so nice and just so wonderful. We loved all the different, the Irish, the Scottish, the English, we loved them all. The only time we got shade thrown at us for being from the South were from Americans.
Of course.
Who were from the New England area.
Uh-huh. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, when I was in New York a few weeks ago, we couldn't go anywhere with that. Where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in England, it's been a long time ago, but I remember a couple of people just assumed based on the accent, they watch television, I guess. They think we all sound the same. At least everybody in the South sounds the same. And maybe they don't know about Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi. We got accused of being from Texas.
Texas, yeah.
It's always Texas.
Mm-hmm. And if you're, but if you're, you know, from the United States and you're from Texas, you don't sound the same.
That's right.
People from Texas not sound like us.
That's absolutely correct. But
it's,
you know,
very different dialect. Yeah.
Without the ear to tell anybody that talks sort of like we do over there must be from Texas.
So yeah, I got some shade from this snooty lady from New England. It even kind of ticked off our guide because he was talking to me and he was like, you know, just griping. He's like, "I can't believe she was that snooty, you know."
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, it happens.
We're used to it.
We're used to it, yeah. So anyways, we had a great time and it was fun and I'm glad to be home. There's no place like home. Even though traveling is fantastic, there's still no place like home.
Y'all had some baggage issues, didn't you?
Yeah, they lost our luggage the first day.
No way.
Yeah. One girl still, they lost her luggage on the way back, and she still does not have her luggage yet. No. So,
good grief.
Waiting on that.
At what point do you just get, like, do you have to file claims and get reimbursed?
I have filed a claim because I, in fact, had to buy clothes for the first day and a half. So, we'll see. Mm. We'll see how that pans out.
Mm. Yeah, keep us updated.
Yeah.
Speaking of true crimes.
Anyways, but it was a lot of fun. I had some wonderful beer.
Oh, yeah.
I had a Guinness in Ireland, and it was...
Was it way better than any you can get here?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Bottled from the source.
And she brought us none.
I didn't bring any back. Oh, well. I didn't bring any back. All
right. Yeah, I think that, you know, I've never been to Europe, but I've had to bring alcohol back from, like, Mexico, and it's a whole thing.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's true.
It's a big deal. So, yeah.
Just buy it when you get home.
That's right. So, guys, we have something special happening today. Are you ready for it?
I don't know. Are we?
Are we talking about my new white t-shirt that I just got?
I don't. Yeah, it's gleaming.
It's gleaming white.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what you mean, though.
No, that's not. We have a special guest in the studio with us today who is our expert. The three of us are dummies today.
Yeah. The team of experts is taking a break.
Yep. And we have our own local expert here. Celeste, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I am Celeste.
Yes. And what kind of expert are you not?
Oh, I'm not an expert at really anything.
You fit right in.
I am an expert on this case. I've been following it for a long time.
All right, awesome. And I know that we had talked about it numerous times, and then we thought up the idea to bring you in, and it took some time, but here you are finally. And it took time because it was us. It wasn't you.
Yeah, we were dragging ass around all over Europe and taking a break for the holidays.
We have a list that is really long, so sometimes it's hard to get things worked in.
Worked out great though this time so far. Yeah, I mean, she may screw it up in the next 20 minutes, but the intro has been great.
Celeste has been a fan for a long time. We've appreciated you listening. She used to come to all of our live shows.
That's right.
She was the one.
Yeah.
We saved her the chair down front and didn't need to move any others.
Me and Kim, we were like, we need a table right in the front. And they'd look at us like, okay.
Yeah. Which table in the front? They're all available.
We were the biggest fans.
I love
it. We still listen to y'all religiously.
And I'm so glad that you're here today. And before I turn you loose with our show and just give you the reins and let you go, I've got a couple of shout outs that I want to say. We have a nice new review on Apple iTunes. So we have a 5-star review and it says, love it, with three exclamation points.
One for each of us.
That's all right. Sierra McCord. And she says, I've been listening for about a year now and I'm addicted. I can't wait for Wednesdays now. Y'all do a fantastic job. And when I listen, I feel like I am part of the True Crime on Easy Street family. Well, you know what, Sierra, you are part of the family.
Yeah. Several people have said that. They feel like they're part of the show, that they're sitting in the room with us when we do this. So.
Well, Sierra's here with us. So thank you so much, Sierra, for that. And keep listening. And we're so grateful to you. I also want to give a shout out to Karen Blair for sending us a couple of great emails with some really nice suggestions to add to our list.
Okay. So a new email, because you know she's the person who got us on the Boys on the Tracks.
She did.
She was was one of them.
No, yes.
Okay, great.
She commended the Boys on the Tracks.
Okay, good. Because I haven't talked to her yet, but I wanted to know what she thought about that.
She enjoyed it, and then she gave us another suggestion that we'll talk about when we finish recording today.
Sounds great.
So thank you both so much. And so now, without further ado, Celeste, take it away.
Run with it.
All right. Today, I'm going to tell you all about the wrongful conviction of Joey Watkins. I really want to do Joey justice by showing you how the system failed him. This case really opened my eyes to wrongful convictions and how unjust they really are. On July 2nd, 2001, 19-year-old Joey was convicted of the murder of Isaac Dawkins and sentenced to life in prison plus 6 years. After spending over 22 years in prison, Joey is finally getting his chance at a retrial and is currently out on bond. This took place very close to us, right across the state line in Rome, Georgia.
What, he was in prison for 22 years?
Yes.
Okay, so he's just recently.
Yes.
Okay.
So, while it is more common for those who must use a public defender to end up wrongfully convicted, this will show you it could happen to anyone. Joey's family was hiring the best private attorneys in the area, if not considered one of the best in the state, Bobby Lee Cook's firm. Bobby Lee Cook estimates that he has an 80% acquittal rate in murder trials and 90% acquittal rate overall.
Dang.
Wow, he is truly an expert.
Yeah.
Because you know, most of the time in a murder trial, they did it.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they wouldn't take it to trial unless they felt pretty confident they could get a conviction. They That's what you mean, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes, definitely. I'm looking at you, Casey Anthony.
Okay, so Joey's parents nearly went bankrupt trying to prove Joey's innocence. Joey's dad was quoted saying he had spent over $1 million in attorney fees.
Wow.
Yeah. After years of fighting for him, his family eventually had to tap out financially. So how does a 19-year-old boy with good representation end up convicted of murder? And how does he finally get out after over 22 years? That's what I'm going to do my best to explain here. I'll be doing a bit of bouncing around. Over the past 22 years, a lot of new evidence has come to light. But even without the new evidence, you are going to want to pull your hair out wondering how this boy was ever convicted in the first
place. We're already out of hair around here. Okay. I've been telling them that for a month.
I had to use Scott's line.
hair is not safe here.
Yeah, this is crazy, like the whole thing. Okay, so with Joey's family being unable to further assist him financially, he started reaching out to the Georgia Innocence Project. In 2014, they took on his case. The Georgia Innocence Project, you'll hear me refer to them as GIP, is an independent nonprofit organization that provides free legal representation to people who have been convicted in Georgia of serious crimes they did not commit. They believe firmly in Joey's innocence, but Joey was kind of out of options. He'd had appeals, a habeas action, all were denied. The GIP was left with a client that they believed was innocent and had a great deal of evidence that they thought proved it, but legally they didn't have anywhere to go. So in 2016, they reached out to Undisclosed, a popular true crime podcast. They do a really in-depth 24 season of just this case. The Undisclosed podcasters started an extensive investigation along with the GIP. Together, they will discover new information establishing Joey Watkins' constitutional rights were violated. I mean, these podcasters really jumped in and dug up anything and everything. They spent a lot of time in Rome, Georgia, knocking on doors, interviewed anyone who would talk to them, made calls, pulled logs, put in a ton of footwork here. As a result of their findings, GIP and co-counsel Ben Goldberg, if I'm not mistaken, he took on Joey's case after hearing the podcast as co-counsel with GIP.
Okay, so these are not mediocre journalists.
No, like these are professionals. They really wow. are experts.
Right in the back.
And you were right. They are not from around here, and they basically lived here for a while
and would get a hotel room and spend weeks at a time here, and then would like take a break, go home to their families, and come right back. And they like there's several times where they're talking about like they're so close to something, but they have something they have to go home for, and then they would like come back and start over. I mean, they spent months in Rome, Georgia, like researching this case.
And Rome, Georgia is very close to where we are sitting right now in our studio. In fact, you can be in Rome, Georgia from our studio in what, 25 minutes?
Yeah, 25 minutes, 30 minutes. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
That's very close. I work in Rome and it's like 35 minutes to my office.
Yeah. So, all right. Mm-hmm. Very close here.
So, they filed a habeas petition in early 2017 arguing that Joey should be released from prison because of recently discovered juror misconduct and official misconduct, the state's concealment of exculpatory evidence and presentation of false or misleading evidence at trial. I'm going to bring up that while this was filed in 2017, Joey was not released from prison until January 3rd, 2023.
Wow. I bet COVID had a lot to do with that too, didn't it? Yeah.
But I mean,
you're saying some serious things there. Yeah. Misconduct by a juror. What else did you say?
Withheld evidence.
The state's concealment of evidence and providing misleading evidence.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Not ready to admit wrong.
Yeah.
Wrongful doing, are they?
No.
Georgia.
Oh, and they did not want to do any favors to help these podcasters find anything. Like, they really had to work to get the information that they got. Like, a lot of it was very, very concealed, like, really hard to find.
And we'll put this podcast in our show notes if you want to check this out and go into in-depth.
It's so in-depth. There's so much information to take in, and I'm just skimming the top of it, like the stuff that stood out the most to me.
Well, yeah, as Scott says, we are the 101 version.
Absolutely.
Of crimes. I mean, this would be
this would be a one-episode podcast here at True Crime. And I think that Undisclosed did, what, 24 episodes about this case. So they got out their shovels and dug, and we just kind of kicked the rocks around and keep walking.
Right. So I'm going to take y'all back to the beginning of this case and like where it all started and everything. On January 11th of 2000, 21-year-old Isaac Dawkins was traveling on Highway 27 North and towards his home in Armurchie after leaving from Floyd College. 3 miles from the college, Isaac was involved in a single vehicle accident. The exact time of when the accident happened is iffy due to handwritten logs that didn't match up and lost 911 call records. There's a good bit of this in this case where someone wrote one time, but somebody else wrote a different time. And so they just really couldn't get it together.
How do you lose 911 call records?
I think I heard,
so much that's lost here, like that lost and then gets found. And it's crazy. And it seems to be a pretty common thing that happens in Floyd County, possibly everywhere. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you know, like Floyd County's records aren't digitized like most of Georgia's are, because I needed to look for something the other day in Floyd County. Yeah, can't find anything.
Really?
I think that's
interesting.
Do it on purpose.
So is it just up to the law enforcement if they want to digitize and get into this century, or is it up to them?
Which, I mean, this was 22 years ago when this was happening, but you would think with, you know, so many different, like, it's not just this case, with so many different cases where it's like, well, we think it happened at this time, but we're not real sure because this guy wrote this time and this guy wrote this time. And,
you know, they're all wearing a watch.
Yeah. Oh, but I think what happens is maybe they go back later and
they don't do it at the time.
Yeah.
Do the notes.
They're supposed to do it right then at that time, like the 911 dispatchers and the officers and everything. And then they're like, we'll just go back later.
Yeah. You always think you'll remember.
Yeah.
And well, I think there were 5 911 calls. I did listen to that first episode. There were 5 911 calls and 3 of them were lost or not recorded or, you know, shoved in the wrong drawer and forgotten about on a cassette tape, whatever.
Yeah.
It's 2000.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too.
Ugh.
So,
okay. And you know what? What gets lost in this is our victim that you're talking about.
And the truth.
And you're getting to it. So.
Yeah. The truth behind this case. Okay. It is pretty clear that the accident did happen between 7:18 and 7:20 p.m. based on other students' testimony on what time they left class and what time we know dispatch arrived on scene. They do have, you know, we do know that. So not a huge window. That's like 2 minutes, but they will use this 2-minute window like to their benefit. The state does the whole way through. It's crazy. So we know the first 911 call came from a gentleman by the name of Benson. His statement and testimony is that he saw 2 cars, Isaac's truck and a small Honda-ish dark blue car running side by side, driving aggressively, with at one point the blue car a little behind the truck. All of a sudden, Isaac's truck disappears off the road, crossed the median, got into the southbound lane until it hit the guardrail and flipped. According to Benson, there was no one else around at the time of the crash other than him, Isaac, and the little blue car. While giving his description of the blue car, he mentioned that while he was unable to get a tag number, he did notice it was a normal tag, not a dealer tag. Mr. Benson did not see any shooting, just the aggressive driving and the accident.
So maybe a little bit of road rage going on and has run this poor guy off the road.
Well, that's initially that's what people are thinking. They think it's just a wreck. Some more cars pull up on the scene after the accident and see the wreck. Like nobody knows that Isaac's been shot. Is what happens. When they get to Floyd Medical, they do a CAT scan and they discover a 9 millimeter bullet in his head.
And that's what made him run.
And why he wrecked, is he was shot in the head.
Oh, so he is shot before like
wrecks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before he wrecks. But when it first starts, they just think he's
run off the road. Yeah.
And so nobody knew he'd been shot until after the CAT scan was performed. And they found out he was shot by a 9 millimeter.
Because I guess there's blood and all from the car accident and everything.
Yeah. So for this first 7 weeks, this case was being investigated by Rome Police Department with the assistant from Floyd County Police Department, since the accident happened within city limits.
Okay, so it's in Rome. The city limits, so they have the jurisdiction, and then Floyd County is assisting them. And this is pretty typical, right? The way law enforcement does this.
I've never really understood why there's a Floyd County Police Department, and I think there's a Floyd County Sheriff's Department, and there's a city police department, but isn't there, Katie, you know this, or do you?
The city of Rome.
There's a Floyd County Police, but there's also sheriff's deputies. I see zipping around in Roland.
The sheriff's deputies is the Floyd County police.
Yeah, okay. It's just like you've got city and then county.
Like here, we've got city of center police.
And then the county sheriff's office, but they just have a county police department.
I'm sure their police department is the sheriff's office.
Okay.
It is. Yeah, it is. They are the sheriff's department.
But they call it the Floyd County Police Department, right? I mean, that's what they call it.
Yes, they do. Yeah. But it is, it is the sheriff's department.
Okay.
It's the county sheriff's department.
The rest of the world calls it
the sheriff's department.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So the investigation is being led by Rome Police Detective Jim Moser. The case would eventually be taken over by Floyd County and led by Detective Stanley Sutton. Originally, Joey Watkins was the prime suspect for Rome PD, but due to the inability to find evidence against him, such as evidence tying him to the car used by the shooter or the murder weapon, he was written off as a suspect.
Wait, why was he a suspect originally?
I'm about to tell you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So he was the original suspect from the beginning, but Rome Police Department can't tie him to anything, so they write him off. He's not a suspect.
So they do an investigation and determine there's no evidence.
There's no evidence whatsoever. So then Floyd County takes over. And investigator Stanley Sutton decides that Joey is the only suspect. He does not look at anyone else. Rome Police Department looked into several leads, but Stanley Sutton will not look at anyone other than Joey once he takes over.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why did they get to take over?
Politics. It's kind of unclear.
Because Rome Police Department's...
I think Isaac's family had requested it too, because Isaac's family was convinced it was Joey. They wanted it to be Joey.
Okay.
And they didn't feel like Rome Police Department was doing their part.
So the family's wanting, they're wanting, someone's got to help us. Our loved one is dead.
We need this changed.
Gotcha.
What made Joey the prime suspect? In my opinion, it's his ex-girlfriend, Brianne. Joey and Brianne had dated on and off for about 4 years. In May of 99, Joey and Brianne broke up and she started dating Isaac, our victim.
Okay.
For about 4 months they dated, and then her and Isaac break up and she gets back together with Joey, and then they break up again in October of 99. So by the time of the shooting, Joey, Brianne, Isaac had all moved on to date other people. The investigators and the DA would use Joey and Brianne's very toxic relationship against Joey as motive, saying he was so obsessed with Brianne that that obsession caused him to mastermind this plan to kill Isaac. But if everyone had moved on to date other people months prior to the murder, how does that even make sense? So I'm about to tell you. The night of the accident at the hospital, Brianne and friends of Isaac tell investigators that Joey had previously shot at Isaac. The story goes that in July of 99, Brianne, Isaac, Isaac's sister Samantha, and her boyfriend Paul had all been on a double date. They go back to Brianne's house because her parents are out of town. When they arrive there, Brianne says she sees Joey inside the house. So they all leave, and the girls go to Brianne's grandmother's house, and the boys go back to check things out. When they get back there, they think they're shot at. Paul isn't able to give a good account of what happened, but the Rome rumor mill is already running wild with this story after Isaac's death. So shortly after this story emerged, investigators quickly start shutting it down and redirecting witnesses when they would bring it up, asking them about any other instances where Joey shows his temper or has confrontations with Isaac. This story does seem like prime motive, so why do they suddenly no longer want to hear about it? To put it bluntly, Brianne lied. She had already filed charges against Joey on this matter and taken him to court during the summer of 99. What Brianne was failing to mention to the investigators was this case was thrown out. It was found in court that at the time of the alleged shooting and break-in, Joey was in Panama City Beach, Florida.
No.
Yes.
So that's how far away is that from the
300 miles?
Yeah.
And 7 hours.
And there's no way around like him coming back and doing this. Like it's backed up by phone records, credit card receipts. And on the day she says it happens, there was actually a moped accident. And there's a police report and hospital documentation.
Okay, so let me just reiterate this for our listeners here. What you're talking about is a previous encounter.
Yes.
Where she is claiming that Joey shot
at Isaac. Yes.
But he was in Panama City Beach, Florida.
Right. And she's told the investigators this, knowing for a fact he wasn't there the night at the hospital.
Yeah. So even if Isaac was shot at that night, maybe it could not have been Joey.
Yeah, couldn't have
been Joey. Okay. So that's proven wrong. And then fast forward to the night of Isaac's death, and she's still saying this.
Yes. And telling everybody. So, y'all know how rumors go in a small town.
Yes.
I mean, certainly. Rome's bigger than here, but I mean, 20
small town energy, though.
Yeah, it's small town energy, small town boys. So this story had opened the door into looking into Joey. Friends and family of the victim had decided he was the guilty verdict. And unfortunately for Joey, his hot temper, some previous confrontations with Isaac, and run-ins with the law for excessive speeding and shooting a house with a paintball gun did not help his case any.
No, no, that's not helping him.
Yeah. So we're going to talk.
Now, did Joey have a temper? He did have a temper.
He did have a temper. Like, it's, I mean, he definitely had a temper. He was constantly getting in fights with people. And him and his and Brianne's relationship was super, super toxic. Like, they had wrecked a car, and because he wouldn't give her his cell phone, so she wrecks the car, and just like crazy stuff. So, I mean, he did have a temper, but it wasn't. Like, I mean,
I'm just saying that that didn't help him.
Yeah, it didn't.
As we talk about things.
Definitely, yeah. You know, if he wouldn't have had that temper and all that, he would have never been looked at in this case. So I'm going to tell y'all about some of the other leads that were investigated by Rome Police Department. I'm not going to go over all of them because there is a lot. There's so many people that came forward and said that somebody confessed to them, that they had done them, you know, that they'd murdered Isaac, and, you know, lots of rumors. But these are the ones that stood out the most to me. First is the Kingston bypass shooter. There's three incidents between December of 99 and February of 2000 where there's reports made of a random shooter shooting at vehicles on the Kingston bypass and Loop 1, resulting in windows of vehicles being busted out from gunshots. Police reports were filed, but no bullets or casings were found, so the investigations ended there. If you know the area, these incidents are not too far from where Isaac was shot on January the 11th. So this is right around the time Isaac shot. And so Rome Police Department also was looking into the possibility that Isaac was involved in a random road rage shooting. Something recently uncovered from the GBI notes in the case, James Garman wrote, Moser states that information received also indicates that Isaac Dawkins was hot-tempered while driving and possibly became involved in road rage. Moser advised Dawkins reportedly was involved in many instances as the aggressor while driving on the highway. This information came from friends, family, and coworkers. Stanley Sutton shuts this theory down while explaining why Joey had to be the killer. He said, random shootings don't happen in Rome, Georgia. In New York or Atlanta, sure, but not in Rome. This had to be a personal killing.
But yet random shootings had been going on in Rome, Georgia.
Yes.
For months.
Yes.
Were people reporting the same type of small car?
Well, I'm about to get to a different situation.
Okay. All right.
But they on the Kingston bypass, they didn't ever see the car. Like, they didn't know if it was coming from the road. They just knew that they're hearing gunshots and then their windows are being busted out.
Wow.
So on the night of this, like, this part is going to blow your mind more than anything. On the night of January 11th, the same night of Isaac's murder, Rome Floyd 911 receives a phone call from a motorist. There's this blue Honda, the caller says. It's speeding, weaving, and driving aggressively. You should get someone out here. A few minutes later, two shots are fired from the blue Honda, one of which hits the back of the truck of the 911 caller. This incident happened on Highway 20. The 911 caller recognized the driver of the Honda as Heath Wilson from Coosa High School. 4 days after Isaac's death, Heath was arrested for shooting on Highway 20 and in the possession of, guess what?
A 9mm.
A 9mm handgun.
They get some shots on a 911 call. Like, this guy is on the phone with 911 and shots are fired.
Yes. And he recognizes the guy, the
same car as
the murder weapon. So originally it's reported the shooting took place between 8 and 8:30 PM. But later, after the police decided to re-review the handwritten dispatch logs, they decide that it took place between 7:19 and 7:25, ruling him out as the suspect in Isaac's murder. So, because that's the same time that Isaac died in. So like 15-minute drive away. He was on Highway 20.
So this was the same night. So on the same night, we've got the same type of car with the same type of weapon shooting at someone else.
Yes.
And but that can't be, according to Sutton, that can't be.
Yeah, there's the investigators are saying, well, we've decided it's this shooting on Highway 20 took place between 7:19 and 7:25.
Even though originally it took place an hour later.
Yes.
And it was a random shooting, correct?
Yeah, it was just a random road rage.
That doesn't happen.
Yes.
Okay.
And so,
now tell us, do you know about this Heath guy? Do you know anything about him?
I don't know a lot about him. Like, I tried to look up more on him, but I couldn't really find a whole lot. So this is my favorite part about
this. Keeping a low profile.
Okay.
Yeah. The real kicker on this is when Undisclosed started investigating this guy, and the situation that happened, they found the case files and pictures of the blue Honda involved in the Highway 20 shooting. So they decided to show these photos to Mr. Benson. He recognized the car and was pretty sure it was the one he saw on 27, the night of Isaac's death.
Now, Benson is the guy who calls 911.
The original 911 caller, the only witness to
Isaac's accident. Okay.
And so he tells Undisclosed, he was like, they showed me hundreds of photos of cars even remotely similar to the one I described and never showed him these photos of this car.
What?
Yeah.
But they had them.
They had them. Yeah. And never showed them to him.
Does this Heath guy have prior charges?
Yeah, I think so.
Possibly.
I looked him up and I wasn't 100% if it's the same guy, but like I think he ended up like getting in a lot of trouble later too. Like he has a pretty good rap sheet from if it's the right person. Because I was looking up, like I was trying to look up like jail records and stuff. And so
does he know Isaac?
I don't think so. He's not tied to anything. Nothing I could find tied him to.
But the person who called and he shoots at them while they're on the phone did know this.
Yeah,
guy.
Recognized him from school. From Coosa High School.
Okay.
But he's just like, I mean, he wasn't going after him because he knew him. He was just like, the 911 call goes on for a while and he says that, you know, that car's like running up on him on his tail end. So he like moves over to like let him get around him. But then he gets around him, is like slamming on his brakes and then gets back behind him. Like he's just being an asshole, really, is what it boils down to. And then starts shooting at him. Like he wanted to be involved in this road rage thing.
Starting something, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, going back to the case notes about where Isaac was an aggressive driver too. Like if somebody did that to him, he's probably going to be aggressive back. Mm-hmm. And the 911 call from Mr. Benson, they were both driving aggressively.
He says that they're beside each other and they're great. Okay.
Yes.
So let me ask you this, Celeste. This guy that drives the Honda, Heath, whatever, did the investigator Sutton ever look into him?
No.
Not even a little bit. Not even... entertain the idea.
He is pretty much ruled out immediately because of the handwritten logs that don't match up. They decide to go with the timeline of 719 to 725 and just completely rule him out.
But had someone actually written this timeline in a handwritten log?
Well, that's originally, it's written 8 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., but then there's another one, I guess, from what I understood, somebody else had wrote down 719 to 725.
But when did they write that down?
It was from 911 dispatch. So the time of the 911 call.
Okay.
But that's, I mean, there's so many situations where these handwritten logs don't match up. They're completely different times.
I think I'm just not going to care at that point, and I'm going to look into
still
the guy anyway.
Like, this doesn't really match up, but this could be wrong. That's what I was thinking. And they don't. They just completely rule him out and send him on his merry way.
It can't be 100% because it is from human memory, which... There's always human error. Always. You can't even trust eyewitness testimony.
Yeah. No. We've talked about that dozens of times.
Oh, yeah. You've seen all of those studies, or maybe you haven't, where they'll have a room full of people and then someone will barge in and they'll stage an argument. And then the other person will barge out. The person, you know.
And they ask you what you remember from it.
And they ask the audience, okay, tell me what the person was wearing. Tell me what they look like. You'll get stories all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place. So Sutton, and you may be getting to this and you just say, Kelly, shut up and slow down here. But does he have an issue with Joey Watkins? Does he know Joey Watkins?
Yeah, it's said several times. Like Joey says that the day that they arrest him, Joey's like, I didn't do this. And he says that Stanley Sutton told him, I don't care if you did it. I want you off the streets. There's several different situations where Joey was... not only a hothead, but drove a fast car and come from a very wealthy family. So it was kind of out of the grasp. Like if he got in trouble,
he was a dick.
His dad got him right out.
Joey was a dick.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so like, and if he got in trouble for something, like his dad could get him right out immediately. And
all know those people.
One of those scenarios. I got it.
And
I got
so,
it.
Like it's Stanley Sutton. Like it's pretty clear throughout this whole thing that Stanley Sutton hated him and wanted it to be him.
Okay.
And so that's...
You said the family was convinced. Yeah. Is that because of the issues that their son had?
The previous issues that they had, because Joey and Isaac had gotten into a few confrontations.
Okay.
There's several different confrontations they get into. Most of it, though, comes from Joey's ex-girlfriend, Brianne. Most of the stories on everything, and none of her stories ever match up. But she's this cute little blonde girl. They put her on the stand, and she's crying about how awful Joey was and, like, really, you know, does a lot to his character.
And I'm going to tell you something. If I'm a juror, I'm going to probably buy it. Yeah. I mean, I can relate to that. If you've got a young girl there who's
crying and
terrified of this person. Yeah.
Yeah. And that she does so much. Like, after Joey had been in prison for like 5 years, I hate her. Like, more than Stanley Sutton. Like, I hate her.
Really?
Because she like goes out of her way to pin this on Joey, like works with to pin this on Joey. And
do you think though that she, and I'm trying to be devil's advocate just a little bit, but do you think that she truly is afraid of Joey and that she truly believed he did it?
I don't know. I mean, she kept going back to him, and she was an aggressor too in their relationship. She was not this innocent little girl that was being, you know, she was just as toxic. And there was a situation like 5 years after Joey was arrested, he's in prison, and she's accusing him of stalking her at a McDonald's, and he gets taken to court, and the judge is like, wait, you've been in prison? Like, you couldn't have been stalking her.
Wait, what? It goes far enough that they pull him out of prison to take him to court.
And transfer him to court. And the judge starts looking at him. He's like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. And she's like accusing Joey of making and harassing phone calls to her. Like, this is 5 years after this, like, or maybe more than 5 years. I think this actually might have been like 15 years later. And she's like married, moved away and everything, and is still doing things to like get Joey in trouble.
So she's accusing him of stalking her, like physically being there,
physically
or
stalking
calling her and harassing her.
She's accusing him of physically stalking her.
She's a dick too.
And harassing phone calls.
Harassing phone calls.
And so they check like all the records. They check his,
they can prove that in prison.
They check everything to make sure he doesn't have a cell phone anywhere. And there's nothing. And no way he's making these phone calls. And also, like, she says he's physically stalking her at one point, and he's in prison. He can't be physically stalking her. Like, I think she just has it out for him. Like, she's just.
Yeah.
It's almost like, if I can't have you, no one can.
Yeah. Well, you go back, if you look at other cases and you think the making a murderer, and, you know, he did use some of his jail calls to call and threaten people, and they had it recorded. Yes. Do you remember that?
He's proud of it.
Where he's like, I'll kill you and blah, 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 you know, and they're playing it back on the documentary. And so definitely the jail can prove if he had been harassing her with phone calls and he had not.
Yeah.
And definitely the jail can prove that he's not been out of jail because he's there.
Yeah. He wasn't at the McDonald's. She was saying it was something to do with the McDonald's, and he's like, he couldn't have been at McDonald's because he's in prison. So
now I'm thinking, are you hallucinating people? Like, do we need to bring you in for an assessment here? Yeah, I mean, like what's
she's
going on?
Crazy, crazy. I've tried looking her up on Facebook and everything because I want to tell her how much I hate her.
Well, let's not.
don't
do that. We don't recommend that at all.
After this podcast come out, I think that like she went. I think there's a lot of people that hate her because I can't find her.
Well, and I certainly think that, you know, sometimes the podcast will turn and they kind of want to villainize. Somebody's got to be a villain because our person that we're trying to set free is obviously not a villain.
Right.
So we got to villainize somebody. I'm not always for that.
Yeah.
I'm just for finding out the truth. But if she's been caught in a lie a couple of times, it almost seems like, why hasn't she been called out on this? I mean, can you actually?
Well, maybe she has been. Has she
falsely accused somebody and a judge just let you walk out?
Or did the judge get any like legal trouble for, you know, the accusations about Joey shooting at Paul? Like, she knew for a fact it wasn't Joey. She'd already taken Joey to court on this, knew that he was in Panama City. And still, the first thing she does after they find out Isaac's been shot is run to the investigators and be like, oh, Joey had to do it. He's done it before. And she knows for a fact he didn't do it before.
And do you think she just likes the attention of being involved in something like that?
I think so. Like, she definitely seemed like that kind of girl that wanted the attention for everything.
Like, now her ex-boyfriend's dead.
Yeah.
And then her other ex-boyfriend could be the, like, so that's like an exciting place to be, you know?
Wow. I mean, and that's like the last place I want to be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, but I also wonder, is that actually, is that not a crime?
I would think so.
If you
it's perjury, isn't it?
Yeah. Like twice. Well, once for sure because of the court when it was brought into court about the stalking and the judge.
Yeah.
I would love to know what the judge said to her.
I don't think she was even in court on the stalking thing. Like they had had him transferred there. And I think like it may not have even been the judge. It may have been the DA looks at it and was like, wait.
So this, maybe it didn't even make it to a judge.
Yeah. This doesn't make any sense. And like, they're like, take him back.
Cause I know if I'm a judge, I'm going to say, okay, now wait a minute, Missy, you've wasted everybody's time here.
Yeah.
What's going on with this? I mean, I'm going to be, you know, slamming down my gavel and giving her something.
You don't have a gavel. Katie has a gavel.
Katie has the gavel, but I'm going to borrow it and I'm going to be slamming it down.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, it's at least a fine of something. I mean, you're going to pay the cost for this.
On undisclosed. I don't remember exactly like what they said, but like it was actually a mess up that caused Joey to get like pulled out and transferred to this county and the DA to look at it. And it could have like, it's something that could have gone on his record without him even knowing that would have prevented him from being able to get out later. Like he wouldn't be.
But why would he not? Why would he not know about it? And how is that?
That
right?
Didn't make a lot of sense to me. But they were like, it was a technicality that he was even there and got and found out that it was happening because it was some, like it was a situation like if this would have gone through and him not like had it not worked out just the way that it did, it could have ended up on his record and prevented him from being out on bond right now.
Well, you said earlier that he didn't have counsel because his dad had run out of money. And so before the Georgia Innocence Project picked up the case, he didn't have anybody who was looking out for him. And so that's how probably it could have ended up on his record and him not even having been aware of it.
Yeah. So it just really sucks if you're poor and you go to jail wrongfully.
Yeah.
Oh, right? But that's, I mean, that's the thing with this. Like, I mean, his dad's run out of money, but he wasn't poor. And
no, but I'm just saying, had he been someone poor, I'll just throw away the key. Forget it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's,
that's why I'm really glad that we have these innocence projects that will look into these cases.
And they work so hard and they're not paid. This is completely like pro bono stuff and they work really hard on these cases and help them get people out of prison that should not be there.
So Celeste, are they involved yet at this point in your story?
Whenever the situation happens with the, I wasn't even planning on telling that part about Brianna. I just got worked up because I had her.
That's okay.
So that wasn't even
my story.
like I was in my original story and then I took it out because I was like, that's too much. But then I got worked up. So
that's all right. Today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services, located right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. It's almost time to tidy up the deck, clean the gutters, and spruce up the yard and landscaping around your home, lake house, or creekside cabin. And who better to do that for you than the professional crew at A&W Outdoor Services? Call 256-706-7964 and let Alan and his crew do all the hard work for you so you can spend your time this summer enjoying your piece of Cherokee County in clean, carefree comfort. Call Alan today for a free estimate or to get on the A&W spring schedule before it's full. That's A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964.
It's time to plan your best vacation ever right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. Many outdoor adventures await. Wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best view around at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a days-long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and much, much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are, and if you already live right here in lovely Cherokee County, plan your summer 2023 staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org. If you want to keep current on all the happenings in and around Cherokee County, a subscription to the Post Herald is a great way to do that. The Post Herald is a one-stop shop for local, state, national, and world news and sports. The Post Herald also contains crossword and Sudoku puzzles, syndicated opinion and advice columns, and free classified ads. Depending on your zip code, you can get a full year of the Post Herald delivered to your door
for as little as $20 annually during our springtime subscription drive. That's cheap. So call 256-927-4476 today and subscribe to the Cherokee Post Herald. That's 256-927-4476. Thank you for being a sponsor.
We're proud to have another show sponsor, Faraway Tree Service and Sawmill. Faraway is a small, family-owned business with small-town values located right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. But they can do big things for you. Call Faraway for anything you want done to a tree, or a lot of them. You want your trees removed? Call Faraway. You want your trees cut up and milled into lumber or ground into mulch? Call Faraway. Faraway is licensed and insured and can handle any job, big or small, from tree trimming to stump grinding and everything in between. So call Faraway Tree Service and Sawmill today at 256-393-5398.
Where are we in our time? What's the date of our timeline here?
Well, I'm about to go back like to the day that everything happened.
Okay.
I'm about to take y'all back there. We were on the day where it happened because we were talking about the other shooter that Heath Wilson.
Yes.
And then got sidetracked talking about Brianne.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to go over the timeline, Joey's timeline, the day of the murder.
Okay.
It is important and we'll circle back to it. So if it doesn't seem important, it really is.
Oh, no, I think it's very important.
So at 11:30 a.m., Joey goes to visit his uncle who lives in Galesville, Alabama.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Just our Alabama tie.
15 minutes away.
Just down the road. Yeah.
And they go fishing on Wise Lake.
Wise Lake.
And so he makes and receives a few calls while he's in Alabama. He leaves Galesville, returns home at about 6 p.m. He makes plans with his uncle before he leaves that he's going to come back and go fishing the next day. So after arriving at home, Joey calls his current girlfriend, Aislinn's pager at 6:48 p.m.
Calls her pager. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then 4 minutes later, she calls him back at home. She tells Joey she is sick and he makes plans to go see her after he gets a shower. Joey calls Aislinn again from his cell phone at 7:15, letting her know he's on his way. This call lasted 4 minutes and 26 seconds. Joey says this call happened from his home. Joey's sister, her boyfriend, and his parents all see Joey leave around this time in his white truck. At 7:21, after ending the call with Aislinn, Joey calls home. This would be about 1 minute after Isaac was shot. Joey calls his sister to get his uncle's phone number, or he asks his sister to get his uncle's phone number for him, and she's busy and tells him no. So he hangs up and calls his grandmother and asks for his uncle's number because he's supposed to be going back to Alabama the next day. Mm-hmm. He makes another call to his sister at 7:27, telling her he's passed an accident on 27 and it looks like Isaac's truck. At 7:35, he calls his girlfriend again to see if she wants some Gatorade. She says yes. He stops at the Save-A-Ton in Cedartown in his white truck and buys the Gatorade and then goes to her house, arriving at about 8 p.m. in his white truck. He speaks with her parents and goes to her room. Nobody felt like he was being off or any different than normal during any of the phone calls, anything. So if we're giving the state the benefit of the doubt with the timeline and the phone records, Joey would have had to have been on the phone with Aislinn, driving at a very high rate of speed and shooting a gun. Aislinn testifies she never heard anything resembling a gunshot. Aislinn had broken up with Joey by the time of court and was very vocal on her not so pleasant feelings for him. So we must assume she had no reason to lie.
Right. Yeah.
The state argues that she is so sick she just didn't hear it.
You're so sick that you lose all hearing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a thing? I'm not like, a doctor.
As
but,
you're talking on the phone though, like you obviously can hear.
Yeah.
But I think she would be able to hear if there was some road rage going on.
Yeah, or gunshots. Gunshots are loud.
Well, yeah. They're loud.
And then the state also argues that Joey calling his sister and telling her about seeing Isaac's truck was to create an alibi.
Okay, but he's in a white truck.
Yeah, he's
so
in a white truck.
So where did he get the Honda?
I'm gonna get to
okay.
that.
Okay.
I mean, the state really pulls out a lot of strings.
Yeah, I'm
in
interested.
This.
How'd they weave this?
And it's like a whole jury convicted him. And it's crazy. Okay. So this was my, like, whenever I hear this part of it, like, this is my no way he did it moment. I've been so sick before and I've never been deaf. Like, it's never caused me to, you know, lose sudden hearing. And you're also telling me that this 19-year-old boy called home, then to his grandmother, completely calm, asked for his uncle's number and asked for his uncle's number right after committing murder. And then he calls his sister to put himself at the scene of the crime. After all this, he shows up at his girlfriend's house with Gatorade in his white truck. And that's, you know, we were talking about the only witness says it's a blue car.
Yeah, not a white truck.
And then that's the other thing is I just don't believe he could have made this shot. I mean, somebody made the shot, obviously, but I've spent my life around guns. I've participated in many different levels of competitive shooting. That's shooting a moving target while moving is not an easy task. While it's not impossible, I would argue this is very improbable. And I just don't believe it's the well-calculated, premeditated murder that the state argues it is. Because they're saying this was all planned out, premeditated, like Joey was out for Isaac. And I just, it's not plausible.
Sounds more like someone was shooting and then he just so happened to get hit.
Randomly hit the guy. But also, he's on the phone at the same time. Yeah, so he's got one hand holding a phone, one hand holding a gun. Who's driving the car?
Annie's has to be going really fast to make this timeline.
Who's driving the car?
Well, we're going to get to that.
His knee. Is he driving with his knee?
Come up. We're about to get to that.
But let me say this, Celeste, before we keep going. This is one of the reasons why we brought you on to talk about this case is your experience with guns and competitive shooting.
Yeah.
And you are, in fact, an expert on that.
Yeah.
You've done it for a long time.
I competed all through high school in competitive shooting. I did cowboy mounted shooting where you're riding a horse and shooting a single action revolver.
And you can't bend a gun, bend a bullet or bend a gun and do all that Angelina Jolie stuff in that movie where they're just like throwing bullets wherever they want them to go, right?
No.
Do y'all remember that movie? Yes. Whatever the heck that was ridiculous. But anyways.
I didn't see that one.
What you are saying is impossible for him to have done this.
Yes. When I say it's impossible, I know people are like, well, I mean, he was shot. And yes, he was shot. But just for it to be the well-calculated murder, like, that's impossible.
Like Joey said, I'm going to shoot this guy.
I'm going to go intercept Isaac and shoot him on Highway 27.
Yeah, because I'm mad at
him. Yeah, if you were going to murder someone, you wouldn't choose 75 miles an hour down the highway in an adjacent car to do it in.
No.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, this is just not possible. Like when I first heard that part, I was like, there's no way.
Yeah. For him to plan this out and say, this is what I'm going to do. It makes much more sense that it was a road rage and, accidentally shot, you know, and maybe even the person who actually shot him didn't mean to shoot him. Maybe they were, I'm going to fire this weapon at this a-hole and let him know who's boss, and then all of a sudden accidentally hits Isaac, and then Isaac wrecks.
And when he wrecks, that car takes off.
Like, keeps going. Oh, crap.
Yeah. And Mr. Benson stops and makes a 911 call and is trying to help him. And it's a blue car. Joey's in a white truck. Like, he's left his home in a white truck. He's arrived at his girlfriend's in a white truck. Like, he's not even in the
He's not vehicle. Had time to swap out a vehicle.
Yeah, it's not possible. And so, but he is the only suspect in Stanley Sutton's eyes. So Stanley Sutton digs up another eyewitness, Barry Mullinax, a jailhouse snitch.
Oh.
The dreaded jailhouse snitch.
The worst kind of witness.
So I'm not going to go into all to the details about him, but his story changes multiple times. Something else that doesn't add up is the fact that our original eyewitness, whose story's never changed, is adamant there was no one else around at the time of the accident. Mullinax's story was so inconsistent and he was so unreliable that during court, the prosecutor, District Attorney Tammy Coulson, says, "We're calling our next witness, for what it's worth, Barry Mullinax." She says, "He is a liar. He is not credible. I get it, but I'm going to put him up and I'm going to tell you, how could he have known these facts otherwise? Therefore, he was there." A few years later, Mullinax recants his testimony and does a deposition stating that he was threatened by Stanley Sutton and told by him exactly what to say. So even the prosecutor knows, he's full of shit and he's not a good witness and tells the jury, he's not a good witness, but he knows these facts, so he had to have been there.
Why did she...
I used to really think very highly of Tammy Coulson until this case, and I have hard feelings for her too now.
In Tammy's defense, is she going on what Sutton has given her, and she's working with him?
Wait until the end.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I'm trying to give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
I get it. I was too, because I've been in her courtroom, and she's also a big gun lady, and so she was a very well respected lady, and I really liked her. She come off as a really cool lady, and I'm just sickened by this case.
Okay.
So Dozens of jailhouse snitches end up coming forward in this case, conveniently after reward posters for $40,000 were hung around Floyd County Jail.
Yeah.
There's another situation with Sutton's nephew wearing a wire and trying to get friends of Joey's to tell him things. Like he said on wire, it's okay if it's not true. Let's just get this reward money. He later tells that Sutton put him up to it and that Sutton told him that he didn't care if he got the truth. He just wanted Joey. So to get him something that would help him get Joey.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned earlier, anyone with common sense can figure out that it would have been really hard for Joey to be driving, talking on the phone and shooting the gun. And it's also after 7 p.m. in January in Georgia. Mm-hmm. It's dark outside. So he needs an accomplice. Enter Joey's friend, Mark Free. Mark was charged with the murder of Isaac Dawkins on the same day as Joey. At the time of the shooting, there was no proof Mark and Joey were even spending time together. They weren't close friends, more acquaintances. So why is he helping Joey commit murder? Mark was not even mentioned in the investigator's files until March 6th. Mark was 4 years older than Joey and in the National Guard. I guess for the investigators, it would make sense for someone with a military background to do the shooting. So the prosecution hinted throughout the trial that Mark was the real shooter, that he was the one with the gun that night, but the state couldn't commit to this theory because evidence was all over the place. Some witnesses claimed Mark was shooting, some claimed Joey was shooting, and others claimed they were both shooting. Tammy Coulson assured in her closing argument, "It doesn't matter that we have no idea who did the shooting. That is why parties to the crime law exist." Free was tried separate from Joey and was found not guilty and acquitted on all charges.
So then if he's not guilty, then how do you then... Fine. Get a guilty verdict. You say there must be someone else they're shooting.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense either.
Like, there's no way that Joey could have done this by himself.
Because Sutton still has his thumb on the scales, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because Sutton wants it to be Joey, so he doesn't care how he has to do it. It's going to be Joey.
Wow. Oh my God. I mean, we're going to have the Beatrice Six again.
Yeah. Sounds like we're halfway there.
So now we just need to put Joey in a blue car. The prosecution found that fairly easily because Joey's dad owned a car lot. They argued they argued that Joey could have taken any of the cars on the lot. Joey's dad made it clear Joey did not have full access to the cars on the lot. But of course he would say that to protect his son, argues the prosecution.
Of course he didn't have full access to the cars on the lot.
Who's gonna own a car lot and let their 19-year-old hothead son have full access to the cars? Plus, there's not time. Change out cars.
Don't believe his dad's bullshit story. Believe our bullshit story instead.
Wouldn't the tag have been a dealer tag?
Exactly. That's if you remember, Mr. Benson said, can't get the tag number, but I can tell it's a regular tag. It's not a dealer tag. So, and they had Mr. Benson look at photos of every car on the lot. None of them matched.
That's not it. Those are not the cars.
So, they don't care. They still spin it. Mm-hmm. So in prosecuting Joey, Tammy was kind of stuck. She didn't have any physical evidence tying him to the crime. So she had to rely on convincing the jury that in the past, Joey had shown hostility towards Isaac and pretty much made him out to be a monster capable of murder.
But Tammy could have batted this down. I mean, she could have said, yes. I'm not taking this to trial.
Yes.
This is crap evidence or this is whatever. This is not enough to get a conviction. She could have... But she takes it to trial. So is Tammy thinking we do have sufficient evidence? I mean, did you get the sense that she believes this is the correct guilty person?
I get the sense that Tammy Coulson was running for superior.
I was just about to say there's probably an election coming up.
There is an election coming up, and conveniently during this case, Bobby Lee Cook's firm is backing her for superior court judge.
What? His defense attorney?
His defense attorney. His firm.
All right.
Why are defense attorneys backing circuit judges?
Like he had a conversation with the governor at the time and said that he's going to back Tammy Coulson for the judge. And I think she just needed, she needed conviction. This case had been going on, rocking on. The family was upset. And
of course the family's upset. They want justice for their loved one, but they're not getting it. This is not.
Yeah. And no parent wants to think, well, my son was shot because of road rage. Like, they want it to be, like, they need reason. Of course, it's just kind of like with suicide cases. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't want to believe it. Like, they need a reason. And so they want it to be Joey because it's known that Joey don't like Isaac.
And they can wrap their head around that.
Yeah.
A psychotic teenage love triangle is much easier to believe than a random incident of road rage.
Gosh, it's so horrible for them. And this is just, this type of quote, detective police work, my gosh.
Yeah, we've talked about it so many times, it doesn't surprise me anymore.
No, and it doesn't do anybody justice.
Mm-hmm. No, like, it doesn't do the victim's family justice getting the wrong guy. And the only person it's doing justice to is the people that need these convictions to
close their files.
To advance their careers.
That's true. To advance their careers. That's exactly what happens. Because she does end up getting the circuit judge.
Is she judge right
she
now?
Is currently a judge in Floyd County and fought real hard against Undisclosed on this podcast.
Well, I mean, it doesn't paint her in a good light. But now, since she's been judge, how is it, any other issues? I mean, has she been involved in any other things like this? Or
I don't know.
If you get away with it once, you probably don't try it again.
Probably done it more than once. And that's, you know, like, the other case that I was telling you about that these podcasters do, like, there's so much stuff. And I'm just like, I just want to hear podcast based just in Rome, Georgia. Cause it's like, there has to be more, like there has to be more people that were wrongfully convicted and things like this happened to
happened here.
Yeah. The Undisclosed podcasters tracked down all the jury members from the trial and interviewed anyone who was willing to talk to them. When asked what had made them convince them that Joey was guilty, it was pretty unanimous between all of them. The two dead dogs and cell phone evidence.
What?
I'm about to tell y'all about these two dead dogs.
Oh, no.
So the prosecution argues that Joey had shot Isaac's coon dog between June and August of 99. Hmm. Tammy Coulson argued that this happened because Isaac was dating Brianne, and several jailhouse snitches testified that Joey had told them this story. The dog was actually shot in October, after Brianne and Isaac had broken up and she was back with Joey. Tammy Coulson stated the dog was shot with a .22 caliber weapon, but the body of the dog was never recovered. Bullets were never tested. It was never inspected in any way. There was no proof whatsoever Joey had anything to do with the shooting of this dog. It was just another Rome rumor that was spun as fact in court to make Joey out to be an evil dog killer. And so the second dog is Grave Dog, is what they call him. On February 26th, Isaac's father says he finds a dead dog on Isaac's grave. And he doesn't do anything with it immediately. He calls the investigator, puts it in a bag and dumps it on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. Calls the investigators, and then like a week later, they're like, hey, can you get that dog? Do you know where it's at? And we're going to send it in for testing. So when he starts, it's this decomposing dog they send into the crime lab. So when he starts testifying about the dog, the defense counsel does object and was like, hey, we've not heard anything about this. We've not been provided anything about this. And Tammy Coulson argues, this is a signature, Your Honor, that anybody would put on that grave, a dog that has been shot between the eyes. It's like saying the signature of who did the killing of Isaac Dawkins. And that is relevance to it.
Oh, wow.
That's horse shit.
Yeah. And
but who is this total monster that has put this dog on this grave?
After like re-looking at this file and stuff, this dog could have been shot and like kept going, like maybe wasn't an immediate kill shot. It's really crazy, this whole dog situation.
So
the prosecution calls GBI expert Jarvis to testify to the bullet found in the dog's head. Tammy Coulson stated that the bullet was never recovered. Jarvis' testimony would be based on x-ray imaging alone. He stated it seemed to be a small to medium caliber from a .22 up to a .38. Based on this information, the bullet could have come from a 9mm, tying the dog to Isaac's murderer. This still doesn't prove Joey did it, because they haven't yet tied him to a 9mm, but obviously it's enough for the jury to question his character. They have now labeled him the dog killer.
Not a good thing.
Yeah.
No.
So here's the big question here. Why didn't they pull the bullet from the dog's skull? Why go through all the trouble of taking the dog to the crime lab, x-raying it, seeing the bullet, but not getting the actual bullet? This is a question that the undisclosed podcasters could not let go. After a ton of digging and questioning, they finally get their hands on this file. It is found in the report that Stanley Sutton, who submitted the evidence, made an official request. If a projectile is present, compare to the bullet recovered from the victim. They did recover a bullet, and the bullet was actually from a .22 caliber rifle, not a 9mm. This information was in the report that Tammy Colson had. It is very hard to believe that Tammy Colson didn't know a bullet had been recovered from the dog, and that bullet didn't fit her case. I believe that is why she left it out and had her expert testify only to the x-ray of the dog's skull. So this is the concealment.
Yeah, I can hear that conversation taking place.
Exactly.
We're not going to tell them about the bullet. You just say you looked at the x-ray and it's a small to medium caliber bullet hole, which could have been a 9mm bullet.
Yeah, and I don't think the GBI agent knew about it either because they just called him in to testify to the x-ray.
And we'll let the jury put two and two together, which you've already said is exactly what they did because they all pointed to the dogs being killed as evidence that Joey was guilty.
Yes. I'm already convinced he didn't commit the crime, but I'm going
to
give y'all.
But let me just say this, and this is not going to be a popular statement. I'm about to say something very. Just because.
Katie, put your finger on the delete button.
Just because you shoot a dog.
Yeah, even if he did shoot a dog, that doesn't make him a
murderer. Does not mean you would shoot a human.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would argue with that.
And that's a fact.
Yeah. And that's, I agree with that. But it does, somebody that shoots a dog is also probably not a nice person. But there's no evidence that he shot either of these dogs, either. There's nothing that
or anybody else
to it. Like that's what's so crazy is like they spin both these stories as fact in court. The only evidence they have is they have jailhouse snitches that are saying Joey told me he did this. Jailhouse snitches that never come into contact with Joey while he was in jail. That Joey never spoke to or seen or heard of these people. And they're in court.
And what did they get in return for this?
Well, there's the $40,000 reward that's up for grabs. But also that money goes it's missing. Nobody knows whatever happened to it. Because they tried to look into that and find was the reward ever paid out? It wasn't paid out, but nobody knows where it's at. Or what happened to it. Because some private donors raised money to up the reward to try to catch somebody, people that knew Isaac's family.
Mm-hmm.
So they contributed to this reward and it's gone.
You hear of that some. I see that when they have these private rewards and it goes on for so many years, it's
where'd the
money
who's
holding the money? Yeah. It's in a bank somewhere, you'd think. It's not sitting in someone's room.
Well, and if you quote promise it to a jailhouse snitch, you then don't have to give it to them.
Yeah. So I'm about to go back over Joey's timeline. I told you we'd circle back to it. We're here. We know Joey made a call from his cell phone to his girlfriend at 7:15 p.m. That call pinged off the Kingston Verizon Tower. Due to cell phone evidence, there's proof that cell phone could not have been anywhere near the scene of the crime at the time of the call. According to Joey, he made that 7:15 call from his driveway. This goes hand in hand with the tower evidence, as that was the closest tower to Joey's house and covered that area. According to the state, though, Joey was not at home at the time of the call. He was getting ready to commit murder. The location where Joey had to be to kill Isaac is 8 to 10 miles and 3 mountains away from the Kingston Tower is. Physics just won't allow the tower to provide coverage there. We also know, we also have to consider that Joey was seen leaving his house alone in his white truck and arriving at his girlfriend's house alone in his white truck. So on top of it being virtually impossible, based on his cell phone evidence, for him to have time to intercept Isaac and shoot him, he would have had to pick up Mark and swap out vehicles. They did have experts from Verizon testify at trial, but even the experts stated he did not feel the jury was understanding what he was saying. In all actuality, they believe the opposite of what he was saying. They believe the cell phone evidence put Joey at the scene of the crime. Experts testified that the very last place Joey could have been to pick up the Kingston Tower was at the junction of Callier Springs and 411. In real life, that represents a rise where 411 goes up over a range of hills and for a brief second gets high enough to connect to the Kingston Tower. So the state argues that Joey must have made that call in that brief second at that exact spot. Still, though, he would have had to drive 8.2 miles in 4 minutes to commit the murder. He also would have been going the opposite direction of Isaac, so he would have had to make a U-turn and catch up with Isaac.
So that's 120 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He's driving. Quick math. Good Lord.
He's driving over 120 miles an hour, has to make a U-turn. Like it's not possible.
Like, what does he just barely slow down and the dude like dives in that's helping him?
Yeah. Like, how do they get into another vehicle? Like, I mean, it's just not possible. And so, as y'all can tell, this whole trial was a cluster. I believe the cell phone evidence was too new at the time. Most people didn't understand
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
We know the jury didn't understand this evidence because they all believed it proved Joey was at the scene of the crime, not miles away.
Good Lord.
You would think you would need some kind of clarification.
You can request that as a juror.
Yeah.
If you're smart enough to know that you can ask for it. Or smart enough to know the answer when it's handed to you.
But as a defense attorney, I would think I would be asking to clarify.
The defense did not do their due diligence.
Doesn't sound like it.
But that's, this is supposed to be the best law firm in the area is what's so frustrating about it. So how did they drop the ball like this? Well, his case was tossed throughout the law firm of Cook and Conley. He was initially to be represented by Cook, who passed the case on to his son-in-law and partner, Conley, who for some reason passes the case to Rex Abernathy 3 weeks prior to trial.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he wasn't prepared and he wasn't quick enough to keep up with the prosecution. Abernathy did request a continuance, but Judge Matthews found Joey's case didn't require a continuance. So
someone's life doesn't require a continuance.
And the cell phone evidence was used previously to try to get Joey out, or try to get him a retrial, but it was denied because the jury had heard this evidence and still convicted him. It didn't matter that they didn't understand it. So I can only imagine the frustration from Joey, his family, GIP, and undisclosed. They have solid, undeniable proof Joey could not have done this, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're like, the jury said, nah.
Yeah, the jury heard that, so, and they said, you did it, so that's, I mean.
That's wild.
And so they do finally catch a break while interviewing one of the jurors. This juror had a hard time convicting Joey. She just didn't believe the evidence was there. So she went and drove the route with the timeline the state provided, conducting her own experiment. She tells Undisclosed that based on what she understood from the cell phone evidence, her experiment proved to her Joey could have committed the murder. Fortunately for Joey, that is juror misconduct and grounds for a retrial. That is what got him.
I was about to say, they can't do that, right?
Yeah, no, they cannot do that. That's juror misconduct. So all this evidence that they have doesn't matter, proving him innocent. The thing that gets him out is, thankfully, while on recording, a juror says, yeah, I mean, I didn't really believe all it. It was a lot of drama. So I decided to go do my, and they're like, you did what?
Yeah, they can't do their own investigations.
Yeah, and so that's what got
the technicality.
Yep.
So the dumbest of 12 dummies got him a retrial.
Yeah. And well, it was the only one that didn't feed into the drama. Like, I wouldn't even say she's the dumbest. Like, she wasn't, everybody
she didn't
else
know
was
what she
feeding
did was
into
wrong.
The drama.
Yeah.
And she was like, there's a lot of drama going on, but I just still can't put this boy in prison over drama.
Right.
And so she goes and conducts her own experiment, but she didn't understand the cell phone evidence is why she was able to do her experiment and it work out.
Good gracious.
So it is great. Joey is now out of prison. He's out on bond. He's awaiting a retrial, but he lost 22 years of his young life behind bars.
But he's still not acquitted.
Not yet. No,
no, he's still charged with murder.
Yeah, he's awaiting his retrial. But also, like, this is the thing that blows my mind the most. Georgia is one of only 12 states without a law to compensate the wrongfully convicted. So even if he's acquitted, he gets nothing for his time behind bars.
I've got a little bit of chills.
Like
on
I
that.
Said, like, Georgia's having a really difficult time admitting that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, even Alabama compensates wrongfully convicted. But Georgia is one of 12 states. There's only 12 left that don't do anything.
They just will say my bad and move on.
Let's hear those 12 states.
Okay. The other states are Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Delaware, Kentucky, New Mexico, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Wyoming.
And there's nothing that the only thing that puts all of those together is the fact that they don't compensate. Politics aside, they're not even the same red or blue states. I mean, nothing. There's nothing. It's not all Southern. It's not all Southwest. It's not all.
They're all red.
And
they're not all red.
Are they? I don't think.
They're not all red.
New Mexico is not red.
Pennsylvania? Is Pennsylvania red?
Yeah, okay.
Alaska?
Alaska is.
Alaska's red.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're right. Pennsylvania's, they're 50-50.
Yeah. Delaware.
Delaware. Mm.
Delaware is not red.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean.
Back off, Scott. Back off the red.
Fine, delete the whole damn thing.
And some people will argue, well, like, if they compensate.
North Dakota, Wyoming, Arizona. South Carolina, yes. Georgia.
Yes. Yeah.
Half of them are.
Yes. Well,
at least half.
There's but a lot even, of red there.
But
there's
even
a
lot of Alabama red. And Mississippi compensate the wrongfully
this
convicted.
Is true. Yeah.
They're very, I think they're that's, both very red.
Yeah. I think that's, yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with that necessarily. I
no,
just,
that's what I'm saying. There's yeah. nothing that is consistent about all of those states other than this. I yeah. mean, they're so very different and diverse.
A lot of them argue, well, if they compensated, then that's going to be the taxpayers' money. And so what?
Like, it was already the taxpayers' yeah. money.
You wasted the taxpayers' money
by housing them in prison
and convicting them in the first
and
place.
And doing the sham of a trial. And, you know, they also should be able to go after, like, the investigator and the prosecutor, I feel like. Like, there should, they should be, there should
if
be
there's
some
blatant misconduct there or something, or just lying,
yeah,
I mean,
like, there should be some consequences here. I mean,
so what happened to the investigator? Tell me about this Sutton.
Stanley Sutton, nothing's happened to him, or Tammy Colson.
Yeah, well, Tammy's a judge now, yeah. right? Yeah.
He went on, like, he stayed an investigator. He retired from Floyd County, police department, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but he's retired now and. Living his best life after
did he,
putting an innocent boy in prison.
So he didn't talk to any of the other podcasts
or
anything?
No, he would not talk to them. Mm-hmm. Like, he was not talking to them.
And I would think that would probably be standard anyway.
Yeah.
An investigator. But were there any other cases that he had that people were saying this? There was this level of...
Well, there's things that said, like, he was the kind of, like, you know, like, old school cop that would, you mm-hmm. know... Either people loved him or they hated him. Mm-hmm. Like, when they talked okay. to people about him, like, it was, you know, there was no in between. Some people respected the way he did things because it was old school and he got results. But a lot of people were like, yeah, he's not really getting results. He's just picking people and that's who it is. Like, there was, they interviewed somebody that, like, several different situations that he put people, like, in bad situations. Like, this one guy, he had him riding around with him in the front seat of the car. Like, he had pulled him over for a traffic stop and then, like, puts him in the front seat of his car to make it look like they're buddies and rides through, like, the hood to where everybody there will think that he's a narc.
What?
Yeah. So, he's not, like, from everything I heard about him, he's not a nice guy and he's not doing things legally.
And that is a documented thing that happened, what yeah. you just said.
Yeah. They go into it on the Undisclosed podcast because they looked for people to, like, kind of get the character of Stanley Sutton. And so they, like, find different people that had run-ins with him and mm-hmm. they, like, ask him questions about things that he had done. And so,
but
that
did
was
they
one.
Did they get people who liked him?
Yeah, there was.
Did
some
they
people
interview
that,
people who liked him
there
to
was
know
people
why
that liked him? And but what they liked about him, but it was people that are naive. Like, if you think back 20 years ago, honestly, your first reaction is going to be to trust the police. It's not as common anymore because of everything that's come out. But, like, there were people that was like, oh yeah, he's a great guy and he catches the bad guys and he doesn't care what it takes. He's gonna get the bad guys. But it was, you know, some of them wasn't even really the bad guys, or the bad guys he was getting, he wasn't doing it legally. Like, the way he was
so he wasn't going by the book. Or
yeah, he was not a by the book.
It was not ethical.
Guy. No. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And, you know, if you portray someone as a narc, you really put their life in danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing something like mm-hmm. that. That's
certainly
very serious. And life ruining.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, wow. So more to come. Do we have a date on?
No, I've been following real closely, trying to figure out if they're, you know, when the date is on the retrial, which there was another case recently in Floyd County that they got out and the judge didn't even do a retrial. He was just like, there's so much evidence here that they're not guilty. I'm acquitting them. And so there's a chance that could happen with Joey. Like, he may not even have to go back to trial. The judge who looks mm-hmm. over the case might just acquit him. On everything.
So, because there is which judge here. Will be looking at
I'm
this?
I'm not sure. They haven't announced anything like that. I follow.
But it won't be Tammy.
Undisclosed. No. She won't be Tammy.
It won't be Tammy.
Undisclosed provides updates on everything. Okay. And so I follow those. And the Georgia Innocence Project, I follow their Facebook page and they provide updates on there. And so I've been watching closely to kind of figure out what's going to happen next.
So this is obviously Celeste's pet case. She is very invested in this one. And if you think that you want to be invested in this one, you can go to Facebook and follow the Georgia Innocence Project. Mm-hmm. And you can check out the Undisclosed podcast. And this case is season 2.
Yes.
Of Undisclosed. Many, many episodes
Yes.
So get ready.
Yeah. I like binge listen to it. Like I would stay up all night having to work the next morning. Because I'm like, I gotta know what happens next. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they do, they're very thorough. They do a fantastic job. I've listened to season two. Scott, have you listened?
I listened to the first episode. I listened to that this morning. I was going to come in here completely dumb, and I figured I at least needed to know what names you were going to say and what date the whole thing started. So I got all of that in that first episode, but that's all I've listened to. But now I want to keep going. I want to listen to some more of those.
Is there anybody in law enforcement that's still there that was there when all of this happened, or have they all since retired? Yeah,
there was some, because I know they talked to other investigators and other law enforcement officers, but they were very like, you know, hush hush on what they're saying. Like you tell, they didn't really want to talk to them.
Yeah, I mean that's like I said, that's not a common practice.
I mean, even if Joey was guilty, like they're still not going to want to talk to him if they're trying to prove his innocence, like because they're trying to prove that y'all did something wrong. So,
so yeah, I'm already on the defensive if I'm the current investigator and they're wanting to talk to me, and I'm like, I don't know if I want a part of that right now. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I guess you have to ask, you know, what's the right thing to do? And, you know, someone who's innocent being in prison is not the right thing.
It just makes me sick. Like for anybody to be wrongfully convicted is so sad, but he's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Like
he spent more time in prison now than he spent out.
Then he spent out of prison. Yeah. And that's like,
I was like, Adnan Syed.
And how do you come back into, like, which I think he seems to be doing good. I added him on Facebook. Like he doesn't put a whole lot on Facebook, but I do see some stuff. And so, but like, how do you come back out into like everything that's changed over the past 20 years?
It's been a wild 20 years.
Yeah. It has been a wild 20 years. And so with all of that, everything that's happened and everything that's changed, like how do you come back and become a normal citizen in society after 22 years of being in prison?
Was Facebook even a thing when he went in?
I think it was around 2000 when Facebook was created and the first iPhone was 07. And
when Facebook was first created, it was only for college students.
That's right. It was the Facebook.
And you had to have a college like email address, account. Right?
Yeah. You couldn't just anybody be on Facebook. MySpace was the thing then.
Yes. Oh, God. I wonder if my MySpace page is still up somewhere.
You know, it's
been a long time.
I've looked for mine and I can't find it.
I wish I could get into mine because there was so many pictures and, you know, grown-ups weren't on MySpace. So, like,
that's true. It was all just,
put everything there.
Yeah.
Now you have to be careful with Facebook. Like, everybody's on Facebook.
Yes. Yes. The youngsters have to keep finding new things.
Yeah.
So that the oldsters like us can't find them. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Celeste, thank you so much for this and keep us updated. Send us those updates and we'll communicate them to the folks here. And if you want to be updated pretty much in real time, follow the Undisclosed Podcast. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Don't forget to get online and say some terrific things about us somewhere or we don't like you anymore.
That's right.
5-star reviews are our favorite. 4 and down. Keep them to yourself.
Yeah.
We're on the internet. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Help me out, Twitter and Instagram. Thank you.
Not MySpace.
Not MySpace. I almost said MySpace. That's why I had a snag there, guys. Thanks so much for the show, Celeste. Thanks for being on the show today. We're great to be. We're glad to be back in the studio.
Yes,
and keeping you up to date on things that are going along. We'll do that again next week. Good night, everybody.